Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy Morgan. Russ, I'm tired of the excuses. This podcast 100% proves there's no more excuses. To getting to financial freedom, there's a million ways to get there.
There is, man. If you want to break free of the rat race, you want to get out of the Wall Street mindset, and you want to find ways to create passive income streams, I just love it. I mean, today we're interviewing a guy who wrote a book called The House Hacking Strategy. I was just intrigued. It was a bigger book.
What does the name even mean?
Yeah,
like, most people.
I know, like, the whole concept of hacking is like a quicker way to get somewhere, trying to get to a place faster, right?
Yeah. Shortcutting.
And I was really intrigued. Now, I would tell you, like, initially, as I started reading through it, I kind of threw up my red flags. Hey, look, I don't think this fits me perfectly.
Right.
But then as I got deeper, I started finding opportunities, started seeing ways that I could apply this. But more importantly, just like you said, there's just no excuses. If you want out, there's ways, and today is a way.
Well, and here's the thing that you're going to gather from this book. Craig Kurlop is our guest today. He's with Bigger Pockets, so he knows what in the heck he's talking about, right? Number one. But this guy has shared with us a way to expand our mind. Isn't that what our show is all about? It's about taking what we've already kind of accepted or known about finance and just stretching those borders to say, how can I get financial freedom? How can I get to financial independence faster?
Well, what's the old saying? You want to get weird? This is a way to get
weird. This just got weird.
It could get weird. I mean, this is a way for it could get weird, but no, really. All things, put it all that to the side, is that everything I've ever tried to do in life, whether it was a golf swing or dance lessons, you name it. And I did say dance lessons, Stallion.
I've seen you on the dance floor.
They say if it feels normal, you're doing it wrong, right? Mm. And that is what he basically shared here, is how he was able to get himself in a position where other people was paying his mortgage, his largest expense, which was his mortgage payments, now became actually a cash flowing asset for him. He was living for free, making money, and using that to leverage to buy more real estate, which has allowed him to become more financially independent.
Well, and he was no different than any of you listening. He got motivated when his job got in the way of his life.
That story
is tired of trading that time for money.
And I just think that you're hearing from just another strategy, another idea. Find a way to apply this in your life. Make sure that you share this with somebody who needs to hear it. Thank you again for listening. Let's jump into our interview today with Craig Kurlop.
Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This is the place where you can take control. You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
Welcome into the show. We have Craig Kurlop with us from Bigger Pockets, man. So glad to have you here today.
Yeah, so glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting interview, Craig, because I don't think I've ever met someone who put a cardboard divider, a curtain, and lived in their own place behind that curtain on a futon while somebody else was in their bedroom. So I want you to take me to that very first night, because that had to be one of the most awkward nights for you, potentially that other person, but maybe they knew what they were getting into. I don't know.
We're not interviewing them. So you're going to have to go.
Tell me the thoughts that were going on in your mind that night.
Well, it's awesome, because I get to tell the story. So not the other person, but so that first night, it was a duplex. This is a duplex, and I was living on the bottom. So that first night, I had people moving in upstairs, which had hardwood floors. So I could just hear all the noise that they were making, like moving beds, moving furniture, whatever it was. And then I also had someone in my room who was just a guest, but whatever. So, but I knew that I purchased this property. This was my duplex. Yet I was kind of curled up in the corner of the room, in the living room, while I feel like the whole house was consuming me because I could just hear noise from all directions, none of which were me. So it was kind of like a scary, like, what the hell am I doing? Is this worth it kind of thing? But I mean, honestly, it was very worth it. That first, the first woman that actually stayed in my Airbnb was actually a really nice, like 62-year-old woman. And we had great conversation. And we're actually, she gave me some recommendations. She was from Kansas City. So she gave me some recommendations for when I went to Kansas City. And we're actually kind of still in touch today. So it's just crazy how that works.
All right. I got to stop you there. So that, and I've done a couple short-term rentals. So, and I do think that somewhere on there, it says whether or not the person who owns the property will be living in the property at the same time or not. I think there is that option. But so I'm assuming that when she rented it, she knew that you're going to be in the space, correct?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So that wasn't uncomfortable. Like she knew that, but it's still to some regard, like, did you guys kind of like finish up, wrap up a conversation and it's like, okay, good night. And you went to your, corner and behind the curtain and she went into your room. Is that how that works?
Basically, exactly. Yeah. It's just like having a house guest, but you're being a good host and letting them sleep in your bed while you sleep on the couch.
All right. That's just so awkward to me, Scott. Can you imagine like your mom going over to Craig's house and like, all right, Craig, have a good night. I'm just thinking, I'm putting my mom in this person's place.
So as long as she didn't like kiss you on the forehead or something. Like that.
She took me a nice dinner. She left me some leftovers. Now it was perfect situation.
Wrapped it up with some saran wrap.
Packed me lunch the next day.
That's awesome. All right. Well, so this is a really interesting subject matter because house hacking is something that you know a lot about, enough that you even wrote a book on it called The House Hacking Strategy, How to Use Your Home to Achieve Financial Freedom. And I want to dive deep into this. But before you got to the point where you're renting your room in a new city, right? You bought a duplex, you're renting out the top unit. What got you to that point? What made you say, this is my strategy?
Yeah, man, it all started when I was actually out in California at a job that I absolutely hated. It was a corporate type job. I was a financial analyst at like a venture debt company out there. And I just absolutely hated it. You know, the first 6 months were good because it was all sexy because I was in Silicon Valley and stuff. Like after that 6 months, I realized it was just spreadsheets. And I couldn't actually do anything I wanted to do. The straw that broke the camel's back was when me and my girlfriend went down to Big Sur, which if you don't know, is this beautiful part of California with no cell reception for the entire weekend. And it was our last weekend together. So the whole weekend was great. It was an awesome weekend. Still one of the best weekends of my life, I think. And that Sunday I got home and I got an email from my boss saying that I had to get this report out by Monday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern time. And that's a 3-hour difference, right? So it's 5 a.m. Pacific time, aka I had to get out that night. And that was my girlfriend and I's last night together before we both moved away. So we were both pretty upset, obviously. She was very, very upset. And that was just when it hit me, when I was like, man, this is going to be like a preview of my future. This is not what I signed up for. So I just tried to figure out different ways to achieve financial independence. Thought I'd start some startup company, find passive income that way. Dumb idea after dumb idea. Then I realized, what the hell, like real estate works for so many people. Why not just get into that? Why try to reinvent the wheel when all I want to do is get my life back? So that's kind of what I decided to set out to do.
So that was the motivator, is having that email and seeing, okay, this is not the future that I want. I'm motivated now to get creative. I'm going to find ways to take what I have, whatever it might be, and create more financial freedom for myself.
Exactly. Basically just live the life that I want and do what I want to do when I want to do it with who I want to do it is exactly what I wanted to do. Right. I mean, yeah.
So tell me, house hacking, where did that come from?
Yeah. So I started getting into real estate. And so if you start looking into real estate investing, you will likely stumble upon Bigger Pockets. And I basically just dove really deep into Bigger Pockets. I was watching all the webinars, all that stuff. And I learned about house hacking from Brandon Turner, which is the idea that you buy a property for a low percentage down, typically 3-5%. It has to be between a 1-4 unit property. You rent, you live in part of it and you rent out the other parts such that the rent from the other parts covers your mortgage and you live for free. And this is a perfect way to start your real estate investing career because you're kind of transitioning into, hey, you're still going to be home. If you need to do fixes, you need to manage it. You're always going to be there to manage it. So there's that. And also you are saving on your living expenses, which is likely your largest expense. So you just end up saving so much money that you can just continue to buy property year after year after year until you build a portfolio that makes you wealthy enough to retire, you know, in your 20s or 30s or whatever it is in the next 5 years.
Well, yeah. And you detail this so well in your book. For those of you, I encourage you to get Craig's book because as reading through it, be honest, my first impression, Craig, I read it. And as I'm going through those first couple of chapters, immediately my alarm bell is going off thinking of my wife when I tell her, hey, by the way, sweetie, here's what I want to do. You know that apartment we have above the garage? Let's start renting that out on a nightly basis. We could put it on Craigslist. I mean, we could go like really high end or we could go like Airbnb, you know, VRBO, whatever. Obviously, this is all tongue in cheek when I said Craigslist. You didn't even bust me on that, Stallion. But no matter what it is, like that's what I'm going to do. And I could just like imagine her reaction as she told me to go live in the apartment. That's what I think is coming. So like for those of us who have like this initial reaction toward that, I want to address that because your book kind of goes through one, like, hey, this isn't like, doesn't have to be the way I did it. And the fact that I lived in a corner of a room and rented out, you know, short-term rental, I could have a single family property, a duplex, a triplex, you name it. And I could rent out those as well. True?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's no one way to do this. I went probably one of the most aggressive ways, but that's because I was taking advantage of my situation, right? At the time I was 24 and single. So what better time to do it? Now, if you're a little bit older, maybe in your 30s with a family, I think a popular way to do it is what we call a luxury house hack. And that's basically when you do exactly what you said. Hey, you have, you know, an additional dwelling unit out back, or maybe a mother-in-law in your basement or whatever. You just have extra space in your house that you're not using. You keep the big house to yourself that you love and want and your kids are running around in, and you rent out the other part just to help offset your mortgage. You know, if you can get $1,000 a month for that extra space, why not? That's $1,000 in your pocket that you can then hopefully save and use to retire years and years earlier than you would otherwise.
Well, and I see this too. It sounded like too, that Craig said we should kick out our mother-in-law out of the basement. I don't know if that's what you heard.
No more mother-in-law.
That's what
I'm sure you guys wouldn't mind that, would you?
She was in the basement.
You want her there?
Get her out now. You.
Yeah.
Or you could
try. Or make her pay you. Yeah.
Or she starts paying the rent. Yeah. Either way, somebody's paying the rent. She is either her or somebody else. That's her choice, right?
I hope you don't get divorced from this, but yeah.
But I also am hearing from this, Stallion, is that, or my ideas are starting to run here. It's starting to think about when kids are gone too, right? Now you have this huge house that you built. I mean, thinking about the house that you guys are getting ready to build. This thing's going to be monstrosity, Craig. You and I can bring all of our families over there, you know, current and future. And never run into the Murray family. But when all those kids are gone, Stan, at some point, like, you guys are very entertaining. You love to have people over. Like, you guys start running a nightly hotel over there, it seems like.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
But, no? But by the way.
Paid by the hour, right?
Whoa.
Sorry, am I getting too far?
That's a different kind of house.
Have people that do that have got to a point where they're down the road and that the kids now have left the house? They've decided, man, just for a conversational piece, we want to rent out our house and be able to almost run like a bed and breakfast, if you will.
Yeah, I've heard stories that people absolutely do that. It's just a matter of what do you feel comfortable with. A lot of times people aren't comfortable giving away the house that they raised their kids in or even letting anyone else that they don't know in that house. And so any part of this journey, there's going to be a little bit of discomfort. They're going to have to, I guess, kind of embrace, get used to. But after a couple of weeks, that discomfort turns into kind of normal and comfortable and you're just kind of used to it. So I would say give it a shot. For more than just like a week or two, like maybe give it a couple of months if you do decide to go do this and see how it feels then after you've got a couple of months of money coming into your bank account.
Yeah. Well, and that's from reading your book, Craig. The biggest thing that I was thinking could possibly be staying in the way, and I just want to confirm this, your experience, is really it's different, right? It's change. People don't like to change. People don't like to do something different. But it means that what you would say is the biggest standing in the road block for people?
For sure. I mean, if you're doing this, if you do it like the aggressive way that I did it, I always say that you will never be relatable. You'll always be different because at first you're having someone come into your house, right? That's kind of weird, right? but you're saving a whole bunch of money and all that, which your friends and the outsiders can't really see. But after like the first year or two, you really start having this huge nest egg that you're starting to build because you're saving all this money. And then you start buying property one or two every year. And you start to build up this humongous nest egg where you have maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars that you can go out and invest, which on the other side of it is also not relatable. And then as you progress even further, you'll be able to retire early or become financially independent in your 30s or 40s when many of your friends are going to still be working into their 50s or 60s, right? So you're just never relatable in that entire time frame. So you have to get used to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely people do things that are different. It sounded like, again, motivation is everything. The why behind it, you had a huge why. You never wanted to be in that position again where you had a life-changing moment that was happening, but yet now you were forced to say, ooh, I got to press pause on that or cut this short because I've got to go back to my day job. That thing's calling. And we all can relate to that to some degree, that when it starts taking over time that we would rather be spending elsewhere. So I want to like set this up because I know that if you're listening to this, maybe some of these things we've talked about, you're like, yeah, this doesn't really apply. But I'm seeing angles in this, Joey. And absolutely. I was making fun of you and Jessica renting out your place because I don't ever see you guys doing that either. But I do know that you have five kids. I have four. They're going to go to schools. In an ideal scenario, they go very close to the same schools. But if they don't, there's a house hacking opportunity. I want to get into that. But let's go to the book. Let's ask some questions from Craig's book, because I think this is going to help people get their arms around what they could expect if they pick this up. And one of the things I want to start off with is just analyzing the deals, because obviously you do financial analysis for that's your background, that's your business, and you work in the bigger pocket space helping with that. But when you wrote this book, you kind of went into that in chapter 7 saying, here's how we analyze deals. There's different tiers of house hacking. How do you help somebody or that's listening here to say, here's how you need to analyze maybe your first house hack that and make sure you're making the right decision and avoiding a bad one?
Yeah. So honestly, it's really simple. A lot of times when people go to analyze real estate deals, there's all these numbers that come into play, like cap rate, down payment, CapEx, capital expenditures, all these numbers that will be thrown at you, right? I really try to simplify it into like three or four numbers. You have your monthly payment, which includes principal on your loan, interest on your loan, insurance, taxes, and any PMI, which in a case of a house hack, you will have that PMI, which is private mortgage insurance, for those of you who don't know. And so you get that number. And then you go and figure out, okay, how much are the rents going to be? And ideally, I like in my market, I'm in Denver, I like to have my rent be about $750 to $1,000 over the mortgage. And that is a good deal. And I know that I've got a big enough buffer that can handle any vacancy, any capital expenditures, any of those expenses that people have these numbers for, but it just eliminates all of the numbers and all of the craziness and just makes it way easier to understand and analyze. So that's basically how I go about doing it. And you can look at rent comps by going on Craigslist and see what other people are renting places similar to yours for in your area, or Facebook Marketplace is another good place to find those areas. And eventually, right now, I mean, I can walk into a house in my area and say, yes, it will work or yes, it won't work within 35 seconds. And it's just a matter of, it's not really a matter of will it work. It's a matter of will it work for you? Financially, it will work, but do you want to live there? Do you want to fix it up? Or do you want to do what you want to do, you know, for the next year? Is that how you want to live?
What about the person that's hearing this and saying, okay, I like the idea. I'm going to go try to find a deal. And then they walk into a potential property and they say, well, will people want to rent this? Like, how do you get enough knowledge around,
demand? Is that what you're saying?
Is there demand for this particular, like you could go on Facebook Marketplace and say, oh, well, hey, one bedroom apartments are renting for $750 a month. And this would be kind of an equivalent in my mind, but maybe nobody really wants to rent that space. Like at least in my mind, I'm thinking, what don't I know that I should be asking about the demand or if somebody would want to rent this space? Because I'm buying it with that intention. And let's say that they're like, yeah, I'm not interested.
Yeah. I mean, there's absolutely a risk, right? So that's why the larger that difference between your rent and your mortgage payment, the better off you are. And there's nothing without risk, right? There could potentially, there's a very small likelihood that no one is ever going to want to rent your place. But I think that's very highly unlikely. But if you've got the rent set at $750, maybe you set it for $700, right? And if it's still there for a couple of weeks, maybe you set it to $650. I don't see it going so low where it's like $300. I'm talking about my market too, so these numbers could be a little bit off. But, you know, like there's room, a $400 room would get you a square box that's like 2 by 2 feet. So like, you know, if you just drop the price enough, it will work, which is why you need to make that buffer as big as you can.
Well, and I think, is that kind of what you address in chapter 9 of your book, marketing the property, just kind of where to go and market the long-term rental, the advertise, the short-term rental, that kind of stuff?
Yep, exactly. I mean, it's all a funnel, right? So the more advertisements you put out there and the more eyeballs on your listing to rent it out, the higher likely you'll get a high quality person that you want for your tenant. And so my suggestion is just put your advertisement everywhere. Zillow, Hotpads, Trulia, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace. If you're doing rent by the room, there's Roomster and Roomies and all of these other things. Like, there's so many resources out there. There's like this thing called Silvernest. There's just a million of them. So put them everywhere, even if you've never heard of them before. And there's a high probability that you will get someone, one person, to fill the spot that you need.
Well, okay, so that leads a really big question in my mind. You just said I can go list it. I could probably either one, put it in enough places to where I could get people to want to come rent it. Two, I could reduce the price down to a point where the demand increases. But the biggest question in my mind is, do I want them there? So how do you go about screening these tenants or roommates?
Yeah, so the screening process is extremely, extremely important. Do not take any shortcuts here, because anyone who ever has taken a shortcut has gotten bitten. So the first thing I do is I always send them an application through this site called Cozy.co. I pretty much run everything through Cozy. And they get an application, they fill out everything they can, includes job information, references, all that kind of stuff. It also includes a background check and a credit check. So that background check and credit check has to be totally clear. And the credit check my threshold is 600 or higher. Because anyone who cares about their credit score, in my opinion, will be a better tenant than someone who does not care about their credit score. Just is weird, but it just seems like it will work. So those are that's my criteria. If they don't meet those criteria, then I'm not going to have them. And then I also meet them in person, right? So I come and show them the house. I shake their hand. I meet them. I get a good feeling for if they're going to be a good fit with the other roommates, if they're a good tenant or not. Basically, my pillars are clean, quiet, and respectful. So if you can satisfy those, then you know, I will let you in. And that's basically what I do. And it's worked for the most part here. So
that's awesome. So talk about from the management side. Okay. So somebody's never done this before and they're thinking, okay, isn't there a lot of moving parts with this? Like, what would you say to them?
So if you're doing the long-term rental, kind of like a, you know, rinsed out for a year or 6 months or something, then it's just a matter of filling the room, getting a good lease, and having them sign that lease and just kind of setting the standards early on. If you're doing a short-term rental like Airbnb, that's going to be up to you whether you want to clean the place yourself or hire out a cleaning lady, whether you want to do all the messaging and stuff yourself, or there's a software out there called SmartBnB, and I'm sure there's a couple others as well, but SmartBnB is the one that I use that does automatic messaging and all that kind of stuff, so you don't have to worry about that. So there's systems out there that you can use, but managing it is not very hard.
All right. So we've dug into kind of really quickly. I mean, we're just scratching the surface. It's so deep. I mean, your book is, you know, 275, 280 pages long. So this is a thick read. You've given all the details someone needs to know if they want to dig in a house hacking. And if they want to hear more about this, you're going to be in the community. You'll do a live Q&A. I'm sure some of those questions can come out, but I want to kind of go into the more practical, right? I'm just being selfish here. I'm thinking me, right?
That's a shocker, by the way, Craig. He never thinks about himself. I'm
surprised. No sarcasm there at all. Humble. Yeah. Yeah.
Good looking though, but humble. So the part that I'm thinking about here is that I'm thinking about this when it relates to college. I'm thinking about the kids going to school. And I live with three different roommates two different times. I live with four and five different roommates two different times. I mean, I was in, you know, in essence, a big, huge room with lots of people. Like, we all have bedrooms. But I mean, you know, like one of us could have easily owned the houses that we rented during college, but none of us did. And so I'm thinking of like, man, is there like a really good opportunity when my kids go to school for me to buy the house? Get them to, you know, get their, like you said, they're nice, clean, quiet friends that don't have people over, and I get to help screen those tenants because I'll know the parents and do this. Is that something that you're seeing a lot of, Craig, out there?
That is 100% something that you can do. Looking back, I had two friends in college that did that. And that was before I was even into the whole real estate thing. I just thought it was cool, but I never even thought twice about it. But now thinking back, I realize that they're geniuses, right? They actually bought the house. Their kid lived in it. So basically it was free dorming for their kid. And they had, you know, three or four of their kids' friends paying them rent. So at the end of the day, they were basically not only getting free room and board, but also having an investment that the loan was paying down, growing, you know, appreciating. Usually college towns do tend to appreciate a bit. So it's just, yeah, I mean, my friends were, I went to school in Boston. So obviously in a city, you even get that, even, you know, you'll get that appreciation even more. So yeah, I mean, I totally see that. And it's definitely a viable thing.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about one of those places when I lived on the Cape for a summer, and yeah, there was like six of us in the house over there. And it just makes me think of like opportunities that you have. And when you've got as many kids as you do, bro, I mean, like if they you get just a couple go to the same school, like you literally could pay off a 30-year note just while they're there.
Exactly, yeah. Now, this brings up a question. We actually had somebody in the community ask this, and I didn't know how to answer it. And I'm not going to necessarily put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. When you look to do this house hack in a college situation like this, is there any benefit of having ownership of a house in that town? Let's say it's an out-of-state situation. Do they then get some sort of benefits for in-state tuition for having set up residence there?
I don't think so, because you have to live there at least for a year. And so it would be kind of a process, right? Like their senior year of high school, they'd have to move into that house, which probably wouldn't work if it's out of state. Yeah, it really wouldn't. I believe you have to live there for a year before you start getting in-state tuition. So I don't think that would quite work.
You're trying to college hack in-house. Well, I'm trying to college in-house hack here. Like,
yeah, I like where your head's at. I mean, keep thinking, I mean, and maybe you're on to something.
Buy it a year in advance, rent it out, and
send the kid there. They do their school remotely.
Yeah.
Hey,
I'm going to put our heads together in the community. We're going to come up with a way to do that.
Well, unless we move out of state, I don't think my kids, you know, leaving. I mean, why go to any other school when Auburn's still available, right?
Oh, all right. Huh? There he goes.
I mean, it's no Northeastern or anything like that. But
I'm, yeah, right. Yeah. So, a slightly better football program, but.
Yeah. Probably slightly less on academics. So.
Well, I feel like those are oppositely correlated. So
that's right. No doubt.
So first of all, Craig, thank you so much for being on the show, for bringing this value. I think the biggest thing that I want to kind of walk away with is this. You have case study after case study in this book that may or may not apply to people reading them. But what you do by doing that is you're getting their minds going, right? Mm-hmm. I love this because it's the historical liability we've all built for ourselves. Like buying a house is not an asset, right? That you live in. It's not an asset. It's a liability. Robert Kiyosaki talks about this. But what you've done with house hacking is taught us how to then make it into an asset. And like you said, you're turning the tables on the largest outgoing dollar, right, percentage wise of your income is now potentially being saved or coming back to you or at least shaved off. So, I mean, hats off to you that you're helping us to think more creatively about turning this liability into an asset. So that's my biggest takeaway.
No, I love it. And you know what I had, and it was a case study that was shared in the introduction forward of the book, was from Brandon, another fellow Bigger Pockets contributor, is that he's doing this in kind of a luxurious way in Hawaii, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, he started kind of like me in a dingy house and dingy duplex type thing, but he worked his way up over the past 10 years or so. And now he's house hacking in Hawaii. He's got a beautiful ocean view, lives on the top floor of a triplex. He rents out the bottom unit to one of his friends and one of the coworkers here at Bigger Pockets. And he actually leaves the middle unit empty so friends and family can kind of come and stay whenever they like. And he's only paying, I think, like $1,000 a month for his living situation. Whereas if he moved out, he could move out and it would be cash flowing. But he decided to stay there, pay $1,000 a month for this beautiful ocean view right near the beach in Kihei, Hawaii. I mean, What better life can you have, right?
I'm telling you, that is the one thing I miss. So, Craig, my wife and I were definitely looking at second homes, and we're thinking about buying a home in Hawaii, living there like 3 to 4 months out of the year, rent it out the rest of the time, right? And we were trying to figure out a a way that we could do that and basically have those 3 or 4 months that we were there be free. Now, it wasn't. We couldn't. Literally, if we rented it out 12 months out of the year, we would not still break even because the price of real estate were so high. But I never thought about it in the relationship. We could just live there the whole time, just get a bigger place, rent out those places while we're there, and potentially we could have made this thing work. So I may have to go back to the drawing board, Cheyenne.
Oh, he's got his gears moving over here.
That's right, yeah. The only downside there is that the Auburn games probably won't start. We'll start at like 6 a.m. So
that's whoa, man, that would mean that we were playing the noon games, and you know, if you were from Alabama, you would know that that's not the case. We play the night games around here, but on that, because I know that's not where you were going. I'm just sensitive.
I'm not a huge college football guy.
Yeah, coming out, but man. Craig, if people wanted to find out more about you, what you're up to, how would they do that?
Yeah, so you can find the book at www.biggerpockets.com/househack. And you can find me on Instagram at the Fi Guy. You can follow me or direct message me, whatever, and I'll get back to you. And yeah, that's basically it.
Man, so cool. The Fi Guy. So that's FI for financial independence, I'm assuming.
Yep.
And definitely go check out these resources. Get a copy of the House Hacking Strategy. This is a great tool to share, and whether it's for you, you're older, you're younger, maybe it's for sending kids through college. I think it's just a cool way to look at how, as you said, Joey, to actually turn our house potentially into an asset instead of a liability, which is cash flow moving away.
Thanks again, Craig. Thanks for being a part of the community, and we look forward to your Q&A here soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these 5 pillars that you're talking about. But how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible. So you may want to write this down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.